So today's subject, we have Chambal Musigny, Premier Cru, as seen through the eyes of two main growers, plus a couple of wines from Ghislain Bateau as well. And they're from two vineyards which are next door to each other, which I think Sebastian has printed you out a map. Merci, Sebastian. So Le Fieu is effectively a continuation of Bonne Mare. And if you're right over on the right-hand or northern edge of Le Fieu, you've got a very similar soil. And then the rest of the Fieu, you get into much more classical Chambal Musigny style, less of the wildness that you can get in Bonne Mare. And then Le Crat is definitely that, because any vineyard called Crat in Burgundy means that it's a particularly chalky limestone soil without too much clay. And so the wines tend to be aromatic, very clean cut, good acid fruit balance, and you know, wines with a good sense of structure without too much tannin, and that will be our case. So we have Crat from Bateau and Rumier, and in fact there only are three producers who bottle their own Crat, the third being Hulot Bayet, who's not bad but not quite in the same league. And everybody's got quite big holdings, and they all run from bottom of the vineyard up to the top. Rumier, as it happens, has got a little bit at the extreme left end of Le Crat, if you're looking at the map, but his big block is at the right end. And Ghislain Bateau is next to him at the left end, so more or less where the words LES are on the map. And you will see, in fact, in a different colour, the village vineyard above is also called Le Crat. But there's a gap with a row of trees and so on, and there's a fault line, and then it's quite higher up on the slope, much less topsoil, and the wines are still very nice. It's a good village source, but it's clearly not the same interest as the Premier Cru. So that sets the scene for Crat. And for Fieu, it's a different story, because it's much more divided up. Mostly the vineyards don't go up and down the slope. They're more little blocks here and there, and they can all have quite different characters. Brand. So if I have the right tasting sheet, you're going to start with a pair of Rumier's Le Crat 1615, and then have a pair of Munier Crat 1615. I think if I made a very specific hierarchy of the Premier Crus of Chambal, I would put Fieu just a notch, or possibly only half a notch, ahead of Le Crat. Both of them are in a style which I like very much, rather more than the lower down Premier Crus. And they're two which have thus far, if anything, have benefited rather than suffered from global warming, which is not true throughout Chambal Musigny. Tell you a little bit about the holdings. Christophe has got the biggest holding, 1¾ hectares of Le Crat. And I don't know the exact age of the vines, but they're a decent age now. He used to put it into the village Chambal, but when the vines got mature enough, he separated it out, and that was in 1993. So I would think the vines date from the early 1970s. So a decent age. As always, they will be made with a proportion of whole bunches. We'll talk more about the winemaking, perhaps, when we look at the wines. The second biggest holder is Ghislain Bateau, who's got just under a hectare of Crat of a reasonable age, but they're not our oldest vines, which are in the Fieu, in fact, but we don't have one of her Fieus. Fred's Fieu, it's a holding of 0.71 of a hectare, and it was all planted in 1960, so they're decently old vines there. It's a wine which I always find sublime from his cellar, one of my real favorites, with an absolute purity of Chambon Musigny fruit. I mean, you'd think of it more as a baby Musigny than you would as a baby Bon Mar, even though it's next door. Otherwise, your two vintages, 16 and 15, I don't taste either of them all that often at the moment because they're both pretty young, but they're no longer sort of the brand new vintages that people are showing you all the time. 16, of course, was the frost year, the first of the frost years before 21. And whereas in 21, I think it made it quite difficult to make really fine red wine, the quality-wise, the reds didn't seem to suffer at all in 16. I've had a lot, which is very promising, and are just a little bit more open than the 15s. 15, of course, one of the all-time great vintages, but probably a little bit in between being young and potentially impressive and actually starting to get really good. So 15s are giving me different results every time we taste them, between clearly being wonderful wines or wines which are in their sulky adolescent phase. Have you got two wines or four wines? You got all four in front of you?
All four.
Yeah. Yes. Well, why don't you start in and have a taste of them? Up to you whether you do the two Rumiers and then the two Meuniers, or whether you do the two 16s and the two 15s. But I'll leave you for a minute or two just to taste your way through those. Well, I have a sip of herbal tea.
Jasper, full o'clock. So only the bottom one is Premier.
That's right.
So that only if it comes from there, then you can label a Premier Cru, and you can
exactly. Right? So, for example, Patrice and Michel Rion, their domain, they have Chambon Musigny Les Crats from the higher part, and it's just labeled as village. Yeah.
Jasper, are these generally with stamps, or what's the...
Okay, in the case of Rumier, he uses stems, doesn't make that much of a fuss about it, and doesn't give you a precise answer. As time has gone along and with more warming, then the stem proportion has got a little bit higher. But it would be probably around about 50% for Les Crats at that period. And Meunier, no stems at all, ever. Apart from that, their winemaking philosophies are relatively similar. They will both rack the wines from their original barrels after a year, and then put them back into barrel in another cellar for a few more months. Okay, if you've had a long enough, at least to have a brief taste, I've got myself two notes on the 2016 from Crat from Rumier. And interestingly, I quite often find that I'm reasonably optimistic in barrel, and then when you taste them later on, blind in bottle, they get slightly less good notes. But in this case, I gave it a decent sort of 4-star note when tasted from barrel. But when we had it as part of our blind Bergfest tastings, it came out with 5 stars. It was really good form. Fine, elegant mid-purple color, really engaging perfume nose with a few stems, elegance and nuance together. Utterly gorgeous, truly complete wine with a suave sweet fruit, and the lift that stems bring. Bit of oak present, but everything's in balance. So it's still young, but very promising. And in fact, I gave it a bigger score than I did the previous year for the 2015, again, the blind tasting. How's it showing with you?
The 15 initially was quite sulky for the Rumier Cal. The 16 straight off the blocks was quite a complete wine for me. No hard edges.
I mean, that sort of no hard edge sophistication is, I think, something that began to get into Christophe's wines sort of in a few years after the turn of the century. But suddenly they began to get just that little bit more complete, a bit more purity, less edge to them. And I think that sort of really marked his coming of age. But is the 15 sort of growing in the glass or still a bit sulky?
I think it's growing in the glass.
It was definitely when I tasted it in at the Bergfest tasting, would have been in 2018. So it was just going into its shell, and the oak was showing a little bit too much then. It was why I slightly marked it down on that occasion. But otherwise, I mean, it's a wine I'd expect to be beautiful. So actually the Kra in his range and the Fue in Fred's range, they do a similar sort of job. So you've already had a lovely village Chambon Musigny, and then you go to a good Premier Cru, which just brings a lot more intensity to it. So, I mean, they are absolutely two favorites of mine. Within the range of producers who are obviously extremely well thought of. Just have a quick look online about my notes on 16 or 15 from Fred Meunier. It's always intrigued me how different their wines are, and the fact that they often don't have successes in exactly the same years, given that they are next door to each other, vignerons of the same age, get on well. They don't do much that's different, apart from Christophe having stems and Fred not having any at all.
The 16 is, again, no hard edges, showing very well now. The 15, you know, the integrity of the fruit is there, it's great wine, but perhaps a little bit sulky. Do you think the 16 will go into that? Into that phase as well? Do you think it's characteristic of
the... No, I don't really. I think if it had been going to, it would have done so. I mean, there will be moments when they will come out. What often happens is you get something that's still young and it's still young and it's promising and it's got intensity. And then there's a moment when it develops a velvet texture and sometimes a whole new dimension. There was a moment when 2002 just went through that from sort of not quite ugly duckling, but a little bit lean, into something truly beautiful. So I think the 16s will at some point gain that additional velvet texture. But broadly speaking, I think they're going to maintain the profile that you see now for quite a while yet. Is the 16-15 sort of dichotomy replicated in Meunier or not?
Yep, it is.
Ah. So here again, I gave the 16 a higher score when tasted in the blind of Bergfest compared to from barrel. They lost about 40% of the crop to frost, and then they also had a hailstorm that took a little bit more off, which didn't affect many vineyards, but their Fue holding is the rows go from the north to the south, so i.e. parallel with the roads, and they suffered more from they're exposed to the hail worse than standard rows, which go east-west up and down the slope. But when I tasted it blind, immense density of fruit, great weight across the palate, lively and concentrated, beautifully balanced, elegant and charming, medium intensity. Quite a ripe dark fruit, but sleek and stylish. So I gave it 4 stars and 94 points, which was at the top of the range when tasted in barrel. I wasn't sure about the, again, in that blind tasting at sort of 3 years old, the 2015 was difficult, and possibly that bottle was not quite clean. So I left a sort of ambiguous note to it. But is it showing fine today, but just not as easy to appreciate as the 16?
I think it's showing very, I don't know what anyone else thinks, but I think it's showing very well, actually. Yeah. But it's interesting that the 215s and the 216s both show that kind of similar vintage characteristic. Yeah. I mean, the elegance of the 16, which actually is a vintage, reminds me a bit of 02 at a similar age. You mentioned it.
Yeah.
And then the 15 is a bit more sort of earthy, a bit more and it must be left. But actually, very nice.
But you could sort of, albeit, Richard, you probably rather leave them for another 25 or 30 years, but you can imagine drinking a 2016 now, but the 15 is clearly best to put them away.
Yeah, I think so.
Good. And if you had to choose one pairing over the other pairing in, by producer, judging just from these wines, would you have a preference?
I think there's perhaps a little more interest in the Grouse. There's just a little more detail where the Grouse, they're great wines, but I think the Grouse just has a little bit more interesting.
So, but round the table, broadly, it could be either way around. There's not a clear preference. Good. Comfortable with that. I know them both well. I like them both a lot. The market's quite keen on Meunier, but is hugely keen on Roumier. So I haven't checked out current market prices, if there are such things on these wines. But I'm guessing that the Roumier Kraut is going to come out rather higher than the Meunier. Let's have a look. Le Kraut. 2016,
740, 2015, 844. Yeah, that's what Mike is asking, what's similar volume that they produce?
No, they'll be, in terms of their holdings, Christophe has got nearly twice as much Kra as Fred has Fue.
That's why the
Fue
is so hard
to
find.
I think the Fue 16 for me is probably my pick of the feels like the 15s in the longer term.
According to Wine Searcher, actually the Fue is getting a premium over the Roumier Kraut.
Yes,
it may be to do with volume, and it may be to do, of course, that there are many fewer wines to choose from Fred, whereas Christophe has quite a wide range, getting wider all the time, because there's now a second block of Echezo has joined, and there is Richebourg for the first time, or will be. I'm not sure which year it kicks in, whether it's 20, probably 24, I'm not sure. More and more happening at the Roumier domain. Okay.
Sorry, Jasper, just a quick one. I always thought that Kraut and Roumier and Fue for Roumier were the kind of value bars from both producers, but sadly, no longer.
they were the what of two producers?
The value bars.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. What these things cost on the domain and what they cost on secondary market often have nothing in common. Right, so time to get your Roumier boots on and look at the 10, 9, and 7. You would have the argument about 10 and 9, and you'd expect the 7 to be quite a long way behind. But in the case of Christophe Roumier, for some reason which he can't necessarily explain and nobody else can, he made amazing 07s, which are way ahead of the general run of things and probably ahead in relative quality of anybody else's 2007s. I mean, it was just a year when everything chimed in perfectly for him. Having had it not done quite so well in 06, he bounced right back with 7. And then 9 and 10, I have my views, but we'll wait till you've tasted them. Do you have the wines yet?
We do.
We do.
Great. Well, leap in and have a taste.
Yeah, Jasper, we were also talking about, for a first flight, if we were to bind them, we wouldn't know who's using stem and who's not.
Yeah. So it's the same throughout here. No stems with Meunier, no stems with Bartow, and Christoph stems, but he doesn't usually specify how many. These days, it's about 50%. Once you get back to the older vintages in this tasting, it'll be more like only a third. None of them goes overboard with new oak either. Never have. Quick update. Bit of information was in the first edition of my book, but got cut out for the second. But some of the vines in the Rumier Les Croix go back to 1928, but most of them are more recent from the 70s, as I suggested.
Thank goodness you told us that. Thank you.
Okay. 10-9-7. Who wants to pronounce on how they're showing?
Well, as an expert on 2007 Oscar, as you know,
yes.
I actually think the 7 is showing the best of the three.
Good, good, good. So, as I said, we don't really know why he got it so right, but his wines are much more intense in 7 than most people's are. Of the smattering I've got in my own cellar, I've actually really just been drinking the Bourgogne Rouge and thinking I could even leave that longer if I wanted to. I have the classic English palate that likes to hold things for longer rather than a shorter period. Then 9 and 10. I remember that when COVID lockdowns happened for the first time and 67 Pall Mall put in place the first of our sort of tasting Zooms, there were more chats. And they, at that point, they hadn't worked out a way that at least in the UK and Europe, they could send little sample bottles around. So at that point, I was just tasting some wines on air. And I chose the Village Chambal 09 and 10 from Christoph in order to look at those two vintages where there was the claim that 09 was the great one to begin with, and then an awful lot of people started preferring 10. And my take on it, which has been borne out more often than not since, is that 10 is much prettier, much more attractive, but it is lighter, and it is at village level for sure, and maybe sometimes above that, almost fully ready for drinking, whereas 09s have barely started to show what they have got. So I'm expecting the 10 to be slightly lighter in colour and slightly more charming and approachable, and the 09 still to be quite burly, maybe even a bit tannic.
That's pretty much nailed it.
I think that's spot on, actually.
I can keep my MW then.
I'll ask you a few questions later, Jasper, and then... I think the 09 is super salty at the moment for me. The 10 is, and I'm surprised by the weight of fruit. Like you said, Jasper, the weight of fruit in the 07,
yeah,
I would not have expected
it. Yeah, it is an anomaly on the good side, I must admit. Tens, I'm now thinking, if I want to have something not too old, but that's really, really nice to drink, then 10 I'm looking at, and 9s I'm just not bothering to put out and taste at the moment. But I do believe in 09 in the long term. I think the concentration of tannins, without them being rough because they were ripe, but the concentration of tannins is enormous. And what do you feel about the overall quality? Are they where you would expect and hope a Rumier Croix to be?
Yeah, I think this flight in particular shows you the quality of the terroir of that.
I did have a conversation with Christoph once about 8 or 10 years ago, when he was starting to get worried about the sort of the cult building up and people paying too much for his wine. I said, Christoph, I got an idea. Send out some really horrible bottles of wine to all the journalists so that they will start giving you very bad scores. And then we will know, the informed will know, that actually the real wines are very, very good indeed still, and we'll be able to buy them for sensible prices. And he was interested for a moment, but felt it was slightly too high risk of strategy.
Do you guys think, with time, the 9 is the best of the three?
No.
Sure.
No.
No, I wouldn't.
No, I do. I couldn't. I couldn't.
I wouldn't.
I didn't hear the question on the 9, because you weren't close enough to the machine.
Jasper, do you think of the 9, so 7, 9, and 10, will the 9 be longest living, or the best, or the time?
I think eventually. I think eventually the 9 will be the best, but there's something special about that 7, and then 10 is just lovely. I mean, you know, you don't want any of them not to win, if you see what I mean. But the 9, if we try the wines in 25 years' time, I think the 9 will be the winner. So a note in your diaries, gentlemen, to return in 25 years.
I'm free. Could it be like 99? Do you think it could ever be like 99, where it never really, you know, at the moment 99 is never really...
Well, actually, I did a tasting on Tuesday night of 99s from Clive Cellar, and they were several of them were absolutely singing. We had 5 Premier Crus from the Côte de Beaune, including Lafarge, Claude Zeppelin, and various other things. And we had 5 mostly Premier Crus, but with Angro, Clos Vougeot in there from the Côte de Nuit. And the winner overall, you'll be amazed to hear, was a red Chassagne Morachet, the Clos de la Boudriotte from Ramonet. His 99, it's just absolutely sublime and fully ready to drink now. But Lafarge was very good. Pommard Clos de Zeppelin was very good. Angro was fully ready to drink. The Lafarge took a bit of time. The Grivot was too, a bit too tannic and sulky. And we also had the Bateau Les Croix, which began hard and sulky and developed into a really beautiful wine. But no, I have absolutely no worries about how 99. I still believe in that vintage absolutely, and I don't find them too ugly. We didn't have the best of tastings in Hong Kong in January about them, because it turned out afterwards to be a particularly dismal day in the biodynamic calendar for tasting wines. But that was atypically slightly below par. Would you like to progress to the next 3?
Yes.
Yeah.
After which I will probably talk through the remaining 6, but we'll leave you to taste them. I bet you that those 3 are going to go on changing in the glass, and you know, you'll change your preferences. So we've got coming up 3 2005s, one from each of the producers. And this is the vintage, which, as you remember, I absolutely loved at the time. And it then did definitely go into its shell. And in many instances, hasn't really wanted to come out again yet. But so I'm listening into the chat. 2015 is beginning to... right, do you have the 3 2005s? And how are they looking?
It's coming around.
All right, they're just coming around now. Okay. So you've got a crap fuet crap sandwich.
Jasper, what's your view on decanting the Burgundies generically versus Bordeaux's?
So the standard view in sort of French sommelier school is you get thrown out of school if you ever decant a red Burgundy. So I tend not to. I might do it if I was serving a wine which I knew to be both too young and a botanic vintage. So I might do it with the 2015s, for example, or possibly even 2009. I would never do it with an older red Burgundy, though, because sometimes the fruit just sort of disappears. The only advantage of decanting for an occasion like tonight is that by decanting, you mean that everybody gets exactly the wine tasting in the same way, whereas otherwise there can be a bit of a difference between the top of the bottle and the bottom of the bottle. But in general, I've been too much conditioned by the original teaching, so I tend not to. I would decant white Burgundy, sir. Come to think of it, 2005 was a vintage that might enjoy being decanted.
So what was that, Casper?
Well, 2005 is actually a vintage, with its tannic background that one could decant. But equally, you've got the opportunity tonight to let them grow up in the glass and watch how they change. Ghislaine Bateau, the vines come from the Noëlla family. Her mother's father was a Marcel Noëlla, and her mother married Gaston Bateau. Made the main Bateau Noëlla. And interestingly, I mean, all three of the producers we're talking about are approximately the same age as me also. So Frederick was born in 1955, and Christophe and Ghislaine are both from 1958. And so they're all now not necessarily retiring, but reaching retirement age. And in fact, just the last couple of three vintages probably at Bateau have been made by her son, Clément, who is a good 2 meters tall. He's taller than me. So he's taken over his mother's domain, Bateau, his father's domain, Louis Boyau, the domain which his father also started in the Beaujolais, Nunavant. Plus he's head of the village sort of syndicat for the appellation. Plus he's sort of newly set up house with his partner and so on and so forth. So he's a busy boy. So they're holding of craft. They have amazingly, I think it's now either 11 or 12 different Chambon Musigny Premier Crus that they bottle. They have no Grand Crus, except they've called their dog Musigny in order to have some Grand Cru in the house. But apart from that, they've got Bourgogne, Rouge, Village Chambon, and then 12, I think it is, Premier Crus. And they make all of them separately. And my three favorites, my two favorites would be Crat and Fuet. I also like Beaubrun and Verroal as well. But Crat and Fuet are both wonderful. I don't have a specific age on the Crat, but they're not young vines. And nowadays, but not necessarily this far back, they nowadays pick very early. They thought they picked the very first of anyone in the village to pick in 2009 and still felt they might have picked too late. So since then, they are always amongst the first. They make wines which do age very well, entirely de-stemmed. No significant proportion of new oak in the cellar. And again, racked once just before the new harvest, but then spend the second winter back in barrel. So there's really nothing particularly significant in the way they make the wine compared to Fred Meunier, for example. Of these three, the only one... I did a little tasting in May 2019 at Berry Brothers. I was invited back, and we did a little dinner event looking at the 2005 vintage. And I chose a flight of three Chambon Musignys, and they included the Crat from Roumier, the Crat from Bateau, and just a village Chambon from Fred. I'll tell you after you've given your view as what order they came out. But any thoughts? Is Bateau standing up in the same company, or?
I don't think it's as sharp though. There's a little bit of like rusticity to it. I think like Meunier is like very precise, clean.
Yeah.
Like thin on the edges. Bateau has like a little bit of like rusticness to it. So I think my preference for Meunier, and then Roumier, and then Bateau.
Yeah.
So on the Bateau, it's just the acidity is a bit angular, and just taking away a little bit of the pleasure.
probably not, there's a little bit, not quite the precision of the of the Rumiere and the Meunier for me.
Right. But like, yeah,
you're being very critical right now.
Yes. No, I mean, I think that would be the general perception, is that Rumiere and Meunier are in the very highest class, and Barthe is an extremely good producer, but perhaps not quite up there with those two. On that evening in May 2019, we just had the Village Chambol from Fred, and it was nice enough, and I gave it 91 points. The Barthe Cra got 92 points, and the Rumiere did come out on top. So if I've got any particularly interesting tasting notes, Le Cras, firm and powerful, fruits abundant, the tannins, while still requiring a while yet to integrate, don't dominate awkwardly. So I liked the Cras, and then the 2005 Cras tasted 5 years ago. I said, no question, but this is heading towards a great place. They'll give it another 5 years to get there. Well, you've got that 5 years. I noted explosion of deep, dark raspberry fruit on the palate, more than covering the tannins. Yeah. The bouquet was still quite ungiving.
The Fouet 05 is really outstanding. And I find the Rumiere Cra a bit kind of clunky, almost rustic. It doesn't have that kind of
not quite singing today.
No, not quite.
Anyone else like to pronounce, Chris? Would you like to pronounce on the 305s there?
My favorite is the Fouet.
Yeah,
I have a little fondness for the Barthe, actually. I think it's drinking very well. The Barthe is maybe a little bit of a window to how the others might end up. I'm not end up, but I think it's probably a little more advanced than the other two. I might do, but Fouet right now is definitely the finest one.
Right. In fact, okay.
Probably my favorite wines. Yeah.
I have a certain family member who's got a birthday quite soon. I've been wondering which particular wine to pull out. Maybe we'll give that one a roll. What you've got to follow. But I'm not, in fact, going to stay with you for it. But just to put down some markers, you've got two 2002s and a 1999. So the Rumiere 1999, it could still be a little bit backward, like the 05, or it could be absolutely singing. I would certainly hope that the 02s are in a very good place. A vintage I like a lot, a little bit lighter, but it's pretty much ready for drinking. So that should help. And then you've got two 98s and a 95. The one thing I would say is about the 95, that again is a vintage in which Christophe is supposed to have outperformed the others. In fact, it's a year in which everybody in Chambol did, and everybody in Volnay did rather well, better than their neighbours. So that should be a lovely way to finish. And the 98s could be a little bit edgy. I don't think they will be too mature. They could actually surprise and deliver much more than the reputation of the vintage. But it'll be fascinating for you to have a Rumiere and a Meunier side by side in a year during a period when they didn't always both do well in the same years. So I look forward to hearing back in due course how they went. So while I'm still with you, are there any questions arising out of today's tasting that you would like?
Jasper, in the modern day hierarchy of the Village of Chambol, obviously we're looking at three of the great producers now, but you don't have to be pretty exact. But you know who in your view are sort of like the top five producers in Chambol now.
Right, so we've agreed that we got Rumiere and Meunier, I think, will be in everybody's. De Vogue now has a new winemaker, and I've been very excited about the last couple of vintages. So they've got to be in there. I'm still uncertain as to whether under the previous regime the wines are less good than we'd hoped, or they just need such a long time before you can make a safe judgment, and that they do start to get better again, having gone missing in between. So they ought to be in the conversation. Barto should be in the conversation. And probably the other one, which I've got two more to name before I narrow them down. One is François Berto, who only has small holdings. They're all in Chambord. He's quite a shy creature. He doesn't sort of go around the world doing tastings. But his wines are rather, attractively perfumed in an almost an old-fashioned style. But I haven't tasted his recent offerings. But the other one, who I think is extremely good, and he has a wide range of wines, so one doesn't always think of him as a Chambord Musigny producer because he's got so many other things as well. And he doesn't have Musigny and Bon Mar or Amoureuse, but Gilbert Felletig. He's got quite a few Chambord Premier Crus, and he would definitely be in my ratings. I'm just trying to think if I've it's such a nice village, Chambord, and they're all really friendly and sort of support each other. You don't get any of the jealousy that you get in a few. Amieux Savelle, I haven't mentioned. There's a small one called De Joye Royer. Hudelot Bayet, there's one thing about their wines. They're nearly extremely good, but they just need to sort of soften the finish so that the wines flow through a little bit better. They're just slightly firm otherwise. And there's also Domaine Sigaud, now Anne Sigaud, taken over from her retired husband. And they have a very good cuvée called Premier Cru Les Noirs. So, there's hardly anybody who's clearly underperforming in Chambord. It's good news. Right. Until we meet again, we're trying to get hold of Jean-Marie Fourier, but don't have any definite news for you on that yet. But otherwise, I will leave you to enjoy the remaining wines, all the food that will be waiting in the wings, and to keep tasting what you've already got in your glasses to see how they change. So thank you very much indeed, and see you all again.
One second, Jasper.
I have one more question.
Right.
From what you've said about Chambord, would you say, in terms of producers, it's probably the most consistent village in terms of producers?
You could probably argue that. It's easier to do when you're a very small village. And of course, it's also true that across the board, Burgundy is so much more consistent than it was before. There's a lot that's really good going on next door in Moray-Saint-Denis as well, but maybe one or two who I think aren't quite pulling their weight. Yeah, let's give that crown to Chambord. Why not?
Do you want to name them?
I'll go around and tell them all what I've done and wait for the bottles to flow. But, I wouldn't do such a thing. Anyway, and Chambord and Moray get on well together. They've just done a big thing, the Saint Vincent Tournant celebration, which normally is a single village, and they've done it together. But more often than not, you get villages next door to each other, which are sort of real rivals and don't like each other. Good. Well, thank you all, and well then, everybody. I shall get on with writing up my next set of tasting notes, and I'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.